This episode of Immigrantly is brought to you by the National Hockey League, NHL. The National Hockey League and National Hockey League Players Association is proud to celebrate Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month throughout May. To learn more about NHL's efforts, please visit nhl.com/apiheritage. And throughout the year, the NHL will continue to honor, highlight, and celebrate contributions of underrepresented communities and have the important and honest conversations like this one in an effort to make hockey the most welcoming and inclusive sport.
Growing the game of hockey for us, for Apna Hockey, is we have a roster of male hockey players that could represent India at the Olympic level. Imagine an ice hockey men's team that represents India at the next Olympics.
Winning the Stanley Cup is great. Well, one out of the 32 teams will win the Stanley Cup, and obviously there's four or five teams that are close to it. You can still do both, right? And that's where the NHL has to realize that you can do both. You can grow the game and still go for the Stanley Cup. You know, we love the game, we love helping others, and those two ingredients are very important, and then it's how you do it.
Hey listeners, welcome back to Immigrantly. I am your host, Sadia Khan, or maybe more accurately, one of your co-hosts. Have I stumped you? Some of you at least, right? Well, for today's special episode, I'm joined by Donnie Khan, the Senior Director of Advertising and Marketing for the National Hockey League. In honor of May being Asian and Pacific Islander Month, the NHL and Immigrantly joined force to bring you two very special episodes celebrating the role of the Asian and Pacific Islander community in hockey. So Donnie, I am totally hogging the mic right now. Please jump in and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you so much, Sadia. I really appreciate you having me here, having our guests on, and even giving us this opportunity. You know, at the National Hockey League, we are committed to making our game the most inclusive and welcoming in the world. And, you know, part of doing that is going to places where the new audiences are. And I know Immigrantly doesn't generally talk sports.
So. Yeah, we don't.
So we really appreciate that you're giving us this platform to bring some, you know, some very good and deep hockey conversations to your podcast that we really love. And we love what you've done and how you've grown this podcast and the audiences you've built and the guests you have had.
So talking about today's guest, you will be hearing from Lali Thur and Dampi Barar. Lali and Dampi are the founders of Apna Hockey, and Dampi is also a former professional player. Their organization, Apna Hockey, which translates to Our in Punjabi, is the first South Asian-based ice hockey network dedicated to increasing and supporting South Asian participation in the sport. They inhabit such a unique and iconic cultural space, and the steps they took to get there are unconventional, to say the least. I can't wait for you to meet them. Thank you so much for coming on today. And as I learned about your stories and Apna, I couldn't help but notice how in some ways my story resembles yours. Although my podcast is not about hockey, I started Immigrantly because as a first generation immigrant, I was just frustrated with limited media representation and archaic stereotypes that existed about people who looked like us, like me. And I thought it was time to take charge. And talking about representation, Lali and Dampi, both of you grew up around hockey, but in very different environments, right? Lali, you were often one of the only, if not the only, South Asian kid in the rink, while Dampi, almost every other South Asian kid you grew watching was playing hockey. Can you talk about how this early representation or lack of representation impacted you growing up, and how did it forge your path towards hockey? And we'll start with Lali.
My dad came from India Punjab, India to Edmonton in the early 80s. And as we said, like, he loved field hockey back home. So when he came to Canada, he saw Gretzky, Messier, all these guys, you know, winning cups. So he fell in love. And Edmonton's a hockey crazy city. 10 years later, when I was born, he wanted to put me in hockey, which was very odd for an immigrant, right?
Yeah.
Because of the cost associated. My dad worked two jobs. And then the second I got on the ice, I fell in love with the game. I wanted to be a goalie at first because, you know, the artwork and, like, you know, the pads and just like the flash that they have. And then I got into the game, right? I started playing ice hockey, started getting enrolled into minor hockey. But one thing I realized at a very early age was the better I got, the quicker I found out that I was very different than every other player, right? My skin was different. I was treated very differently. And the better I got, I felt there was more animosity towards me, right? From whether it be from coaches, parents on my own team, parents from other teams, right? And unfortunately, I learned at a very young age what racism was. That's a kid that, you know, was born to immigrant parents on the prairies in Canada, playing AAA. I wish I had a mentor, right? Someone that looked like me. Right, just how you said, Sadia, like, I wish I had someone that looked like me. And not only that looked like me, but that could kind of guide me, talk to me, right? I wish I had a guy like Dampy growing up. Damps is one of the first South Asian pro hockey players in our community. I wish I had some guidance from, you know, role models. And that's why we started the whole thing, right? That isolation and a loneliness that I had growing up, I didn't want any other kid to go through that. I wanted to let these kids know that, you know, are playing minor hockey, that are minorities, there's others that look like you. And they're not playing at low levels either. They're playing at the highest levels in hockey.
Well, I grew up in a small mining town, a coal mining town. There was about 65 Punjabi. There's one Pakistani family, and there's about six or seven Fijian families there. So collectively, there's about 75 plus. And I was born in 1976, so I'm way older than Lali, that's for sure. But I wouldn't say friends, but people that I knew that were 5-6 years older than me that played hockey. Then they were apne, right? They're Punjabi. So it made it easier for my parents to adjust to life in Sparwood because of all the families, right? And a lot of the families that did immigrate to Canada and settle in Sparwood were all from the Moga side, if in the state of Punjab, in the same area. So they got along pretty good. Like, it was like they had some commonality. Because there was other people playing it, that made it easier for me to just enter hockey. And then when I started playing the game, I have always had at least one player that looked like Apna, Punjabi player, up to the age of probably, Pee-wee, my second year Pee-wee. So when I was 12, 13 years old, then all the players that I played with, or my brother played only for 3 years, my other friends played and started dropping off. But I also had parents that actually seen my development, seen how much I excelled. You know, when there's a C on your jersey, usually at a young age, that means you're good player. So they're, you know, that inspired them. And my dad was a little bit of an athlete when he was in India. So he was like, he liked it. My mom loved the attention because, you know, she'll tell you about it. If she was on this podcast, she'd be jumping up and down. But like, yeah, I think it made an easier transition when I was younger, but in a small town, there was an embracement of me playing. There were some rules that they put in place that they've said it was a general rule, but it was basically because I was scoring a lot of goals. They made it. And then the following year, it was like gone once I was done that age group. And it's like, you know, but my dad noticed it all. A lot of side racism, you know, some of the comments that were being made towards me because I was at that level of hockey. And he didn't let it bother me. He didn't let it bring it in. He kind of kept going. He's like, don't worry, they'll say stuff. And I know that, you know, after winning, it's not even winning the award, but even before that, I think when we started talking about diversity, my dad said that there was a lot of times where I could have spoke up or said something or defended or made a comment, but I just didn't want to do that because I just didn't want to create any negativity. I had to take it so that you can keep going and doing what you're doing. And in full circle, me and Lali now have the opportunity to be a voice and to be the supporting people, a program that now can step in and say, no, that's not right, that's wrong. And being able to play hockey, I didn't have any mentors. I think my dad would probably be the, and my mom, I think both, just the way they did things helped out. Again, just like Lali, I wish I had somebody. I think some different decisions could have been made in my hockey career. I wasn't the confident and the outgoing and the social when I was younger. I was very quiet, and they'd always say, pull it up, like, I wouldn't say too much. And now you can put me on podcasts and I can talk for 24 hours straight, right? So it's just like you build your personality. And that's what I think Lali and my paths aligned in. You know, we love the game, we love helping others. And those two ingredients are very important. And then it's how you do it. And and both of our stories are similar, but different. And we both hoped we had a mentor. So I was fortunate enough to keep going and employing, just because my parents, like my dad became the mentor and he was the positive side of things. But all in all, stories are similar, but different. And both are success stories in my mind.
I don't play hockey. I work in hockey. I've worked in advertising most of my professional career before I came to the National Hockey League. And I've had these conversations with former hockey players of color where you just want to prove yourself when you're in the thick of it, whether you're working in a corporate environment or whether you're on the ice. You want to just be seen as somebody who's doing a good job. You don't want to have to focus on the color of your skin, whether you have an accent or not, or, you know, that sort of thing. And I appreciate what you said. So you end up taking it in, right? And whether you both had different experiences, but can you talk a little bit about how it kind of felt as you're kind of going through that? Because both of you were very young when you were going through it.
Like, I mean, for me, after I stopped playing in 2011, I kind of just focused on academics, right? I went to university. It just got so sour with hockey that I kind of just had to mentally just step away from it and kind of focus on, you know, the next aspect of my life. Because hockey was such a big thing in my life. I was on the ice probably like, I'd say six out of the 7 days, right? From the age of like 8 to AAA all the way up to like 17, 18, right? Like I was always on hockey academy, on the ice, always practicing with the best players. And there was so much hurt that went into what happened in my career that when I was done with it, I didn't want to look back, right? It took me, I'd say most of my undergrad to really understand what Upnaw hockey, like I had the idea, I think 3 years into my undergrad, Upnaw hockey. But what did it mean? Was this for me or was this for someone else? Like, what was this? I didn't even know what it was going to turn into. For 2 years, I did nothing. I just thought of the name, you know, talked about it with, you know, family, friends, and that's all it was. It was just an idea. Until I actually ran into, when I was doing my MBA admission exam, the GMAT, I had an instructor that was Punjabi. And I took him out to an Oilers hockey game and I talked to him about what happened in my career, you know, the different coaches, parents, all the kind of the BS I had to go through. And then I talked about Upnaw hockey with him. And he's like, Lali, like, what are you doing about this? Right. He's like, you know, you obviously want to go to, you know, get into the MBA program at the U of A and you want to, you know, you have a good head on your shoulders. Like, why don't you just try this out and see where it goes? That was the big push. I'm like, yeah, that's true. Like, I mean, what do I have to lose, right? I mean, I want to do this so kids don't have to go through what I did. So I guess we'll start with a hockey camp. You know, we did flyers, everything. And then that summer is when Damps reached out to me. And I knew of Damps, but I didn't know him, right? And, like, that's when it's kind of just clicked, right? I mean, purpose and passion for me came from a very dark place. And it took a lot for me to step out of my bubble and look back at my career and say, hey, that was wrong. What I went through was wrong. Kids should not have to go through that, especially immigrant parents, their kids, people that look different, right? They don't have to go through the same stuff I did. Because there's a lot of systemic racism that really, to this day, still messes with my head, right? What could have been? And that's the whole thing. It's like the biggest thing is stepping out of that bubble and pursuing that passion to help. And for me and Damps, it's like relentless, right? Like it's a fire that does not extinguish. Like we're on a mission to, again, help our community, help minorities, grow the game of hockey internationally. We want to see more diversity in hockey. And that's why, you know, we're on the podcast, why, you know, Damps won the NHL award, gives us even more of a platform to speak out on these like racial injustices that minorities go through. So that's the most rewarding part. That I personally turned a very negative situation that I grew up in, we turned in such a positive situation with Upnaw hockey.
That's such an important message that you're giving, turning your struggle into something positive. It takes a lot of courage to do that, right?
What did hockey mean to you guys growing up? You know, what is it? And I'm also struck, Lali, is that there's something about the game, right, and what it means is it'd be very easy for someone like you to just kind of step away from this and say, I'm done with it, but you're sort of turning it into a positive. Like, there's something about the game, the sort of like the, you know, at its essence, it teaches us values and, you know, all the things we talk about. It helps build character and things like that. You're playing on the team and you hold each other accountable and you look up, you know, you have each other's backs. And I think it's that thing that kind of brings people like us and Lali, even with your experiences, to back to it, where you don't want to turn your back on it because you know the good that's there. And you just want to make sure that it is available to people of all ethnicities and color and background and, you know, socioeconomic status even. So, you know, maybe we do take a step back. I mean, what does it mean to be playing? Mm. What is it, you know, have it coming with the Punjabi background, sons of immigrants? What did it mean for you guys to be playing hockey? How did that fit into your Canadian experience, your immigrant experience, and then, you know, who you guys are today?
All I knew was I lived, breathed hockey growing up. So that's all I knew. All my best friends are from it. The friendships I made from it, I made some very good friends throughout the years through hockey. And that's something that I'll always value. Although my experience weren't good, I feel that it's now me and Dams, like, it's our social responsibility to ensure that kids, for especially from our community, don't have to go through what I did, had these experiences, but also are connected to people, to players, former players like Dams. So they're connected and they understand that there's, wow, there's more of us. Because that's what's going to really bridge that gap.
So I have a few questions, but the first question that I have is focused on Apna. Now, Apna was born out of your frustration of how different communities are represented within the NHL or hockey space, right? But I'm curious to know, how are you catering to different diverse communities within the broader BIPOC community? Because all of our experiences are different. My experiences are different from experiences of Black community, Indigenous community, East Asian community. And I'm sure Apna Hockey is not just for South Asian community, right? So how are you making sure that every other community feels comfortable? Because in some ways, you are being an ally to those particular communities.
When we do our hockey camps, when we do any kind of programming within Apna Hockey, me and Dams have made it very clear that this is not for just the South Asian community. Mm. We named it Apna Hockey because we wanted our community to have that sense of kind of a network, right? Like, hey, this is ours. And at the camps, I know Dams can attest to this, we have so many different types of players that come through. And I've personally been to like different conferences where, you know, the Black community has talked about, you know, their issues with hockey. The Aboriginals of Canada, the Indigenous have talked about, you know, the struggles of public schools and what they went through, you know, with hockey. I was representing the South Asian community and talked about the struggles of my people, and East Asian people were there too. Once we started realizing we had very similar stories, it's up to different minorities to work together to reach that common goal.
What does working together look like to you, Dampy and Lali? What does it entail? What is coalition building for both of you?
Understanding each community's pains and struggles. Mm. I think that's the biggest thing, right? What the Black community has been going through for, I don't know how many years, hundreds of years down in the States, in North America, understanding their pain. Understanding why they're standing up and saying something. The Asians, right? Like what they're going through with Asian hate currently circulating, you know, in North America. Understanding their pain. It's about understanding one another and then creating an environment where all of us can come together and be positive. And I know Dams, you can talk about the hockey camps you're running down in Calgary. So much diversity at the camps that Dams runs.
That's a really good question because some people that are like Punjabi people that have made comments like, hey, you guys just deal with your South Asian community. I'm like, well, on our Instagram, we do showcase our South Asian players so that inspires, motivates, and gives people knowledge that there's male and females playing hockey at a respectful level that they can look up to. And we've gotten like so much positivity on that. We didn't know that there's four girls playing in university hockey, right? We didn't know that there's a player playing in the BC Junior Hockey League, and obviously Jajar Pekera is playing up in the NHL. So that's one thing, is that we do highlight our South Asian players. And also now we're showing awareness of even stuff that's going on currently in current events.
So both of you have talked about racism, And from what I notice, you are very comfortable in your own skin, right? You're wearing your identity unapologetically. And that's what I love, because in a way, it's liberating, right? I've started doing that. I don't care. I'm a woman of color. I'm Muslim. I come from Pakistan. And there was a time when I wouldn't talk about my identity as much. But now I wear it proudly, because it's so, so important to accept that. But as people of color, I feel like our skin color is part of our consciousness every day, not in a bad way, not in a burdensome way, but in a way where it informs us, where it helps, it fuels our passion to do things. For both of you, can you recall an instance when this was most apparent to you, your skin color?
Yeah, like I remember playing Bantam hockey, and it was a Friday night. I was the captain of our hockey team, and Crow's Nest Pass is in Alberta. It's a small town. And so when you're 14, 15 people in small towns, you don't need cars to drive around. You can just go anywhere, walking distance. And I remember we played this team. There were our rival teams, and there was probably, so I was 15. So our high schools are usually from 7 to 12 in small towns. So it's grouped together because the populations are smaller. And I remember going in warm up, and I see on the other side of the rink, and it's a small rink too. So the parents are sitting down, and there's like 20 to 25 students. And as soon as we're doing warm up, we're on this side. We're the visiting team. The home team's on this side. So these kids walk this way, and I'm like, why are they walking this way? And it was to poke fun at me. And I laugh about it now, because I still remember skating around and like, what are these guys doing? It's like a big parade that went from that side to this. And they're knocking on the glass and pointing to me. And I remember they stopped after a couple of minutes, because the warm up is not like NHL warm up where there's 20 minutes. It's just a quick skate around, maybe, you know, do a drill. And then as the game proceeded, I got, you know, it was contact hockey. So I got knocked down a few times, and they would be cheering, and I would hear like, put Curry on the puck, it slides better. And I went to the box. I'm like, and one guy goes, I can't believe they said that. And I'm like, it's kind of funny, right? Cause I could have scored there if I had Curry on the puck. Right. And he started laughing. So I made a joke out of it, cause I had a little bit of knack of joking. But as the game got more serious, and that's when the best players come out, both sides of their team. And I ended up scoring a couple goals, and I got hammered in the corners, like hard body check. And I remember looking up, and they're slamming on there. And the looks on their faces weren't like, ha ha ha, you fell down, you got knocked down. It was that look, like arrogant look, right? Mm-hmm. And these are all 14, 15, 16 year old kids that are here. And I remember looking up and getting up and looking over my right shoulder, and I can see so much hate. You know, when you can sense mm-hmm. hate, it wasn't mm-hmm. like, it was like, really, like I play ball hockey competitively, ice hockey competitively here still. And I don't think I would generate that much hate, right? So, but that was natural, because what I said. So, and we ended up winning 5-4, and I think, and I got home and I was quiet. And usually we debrief, and my dad tells me how much I screwed up in the game. And my mom's like, no, dad, well, then he was fine and whatever. And, you know, let him eat. And I was like, no. And my brother, even instead, he's like, what's wrong? I broke down. And I go, I didn't like what they said. And they were calling me the P word, and they were calling me the H word. And I didn't like that. And I was like, I was at that age. I was not 10, 11 years old where I can hide it now. But I try to pass it on as a joke first, because I was like, hey, but when I seen the look in their eyes, and I can, and it doesn't haunt me or anything. It just makes me realize that how people can be. Mom sees a 15-year-old crying. She started kind of tearing up. And I liked my dad's demeanor on that. He's like, he's never like put the like son like this. He's never been that lovey-dovey type guy. He's like, it's okay. You can cry. Like, he didn't hug me. He didn't bring me in, you know. And he goes, this will help you open later on. Don't worry. And he just winked at me, kind of like, you'll be strong. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm going, you're not going to say anything. Like, you know, like that's what's going through a kid's mind. And then I just built this layer around me. Like, yeah, screw it. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to get as far in hockey as possible. And I'm not going to let this be a big episode. But this became more of a driving force for me. It became like a passion, like, oh, let's do this. Like, you know, and rather than crumble and implode, right? So that was just how I was. And just the way my dad was. And my mom looked at my dad like, nothing? Like, no hug or anything? And you can tell he's like, no, I'll make my son, you know, just the way his demeanor was.
With me, it was... I mean, it started happening at a very young age. The blatant racism that Dams talked about was always there, right? Mm. Like the name calling, the looks. What hurt me the most was the systemic one when it came from my own coaches, parents from my own team, right? I have so many different incidents, but I'll talk about one that just always haunts me and one that will forever be with me. So it was when I was trying out for BAM AAA here in Edmonton. I was one of the last cuts for BAM AAA as a first year. Obviously, in your second year, there's an opportunity for you to get drafted into the Canadian Hockey League, so WHL for us. In my first year, I was the last cut for a kid that was my age, who was also first year, but that kid had torn his ACL. And basically, they allowed this kid to be on the team, and everyone knew he was going to quit the team 2 weeks later, which he did. And I only got one call up that year, right? So, I mean, it was disappointing, right? Because I'm a very competitive guy. I knew I could play at that level. And I got cut for a player that quit the team 2 weeks later because of an injury that everyone knew about. The following year, with the same coach, I tried for BAM AAA. Obviously, I had a great year in AA. Went into BAM AAA with a lot of optimism, right? Obviously, I was last cut from the previous year. And I remember this, and this haunts me. And I still remember. His name was Larry, my coach. At the last meeting before the final cuts, he brings me in. And he sits me down. It's just me and him on a chair in a classroom at the rink. He looks at me and he's like, "Lally, you're very lucky to make the team." That broke me. I didn't even know what to say. Like, that really broke me. I'm like, I was the last cut last year. I had a really good tryout. And this is the last thing you're going to say before I'm on the team. You're very lucky to make the team.
Obviously, there was an intent, right?
There's an intent. And I felt it. That year was probably the worst year I've ever had. That's the year I wish I had a guy like Dampy to talk to, right? I was sitting on the bench most of the time. And that was supposed to be a year I was supposed to be, you know, waking up in the morning, excited to go play AAA hockey in Alberta, playing with the best 1992-year-old players. Some of them are in the NHL right now, currently playing. I should be excited to play.
Yeah.
I wasn't. I didn't want to play. I wanted to not wake up. I didn't want to go to practice. I didn't want to play. And it's that isolation, that just feeling alone. Because I could talk to my dad a bit about this. Obviously, my dad was similar to Dams' dad. He's like, just go through it. But it was tough on me mentally, right? Mentally, I think that was the biggest challenge in my career is my mental health suffered as a kid because of hockey.
I was going to ask you about that.
It really suffered a lot. And I think that's why there's such a passion to grow this, because that incident with that AAA coach, I will never forget. And nor do I want a kid to go through what I did like that. So the stuff that I went through, it's very deeply rooted in me. And that's why you see such a push for diversity, such a push for supporting one another, supporting different minority groups in hockey, because that kind of stuff, kids shouldn't be going through that.
And passion for it. Hockey is such a big part of life in Canada, right? It's like rite of passage. It probably gives a lot of kids their sense of belonging and who they are as Canadians. There are still only a handful of Asian players. What do you think are the barriers and how do we overcome those barriers? And this question is for both of you.
Lally will take this one right now, right at the beginning. He's been itching for this question.
I find the biggest barriers in hockey right now, I think that there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect between the NHL and the 32 teams. The NHL, I've met Kim Davis, Rob Knesarek, wonderful people. The NHL itself is heading in a direction. The Shield is heading in a direction that wants to be more inclusive and diverse. Problem is the other 32 teams don't care. There's such a big disconnect between the NHL and the 32 teams when it comes to community outreach. We just had a presentation for the Oilers, and I had to explain to them basically, how are we going to create access points for minorities to get into the game of hockey? For example, from the NBA. So the Toronto Raptors have a super fan. His name is Nav Bhatia. Are you guys familiar with him?
I am.
So Nav Bhatia, again, from Punjab, like our parents, he came in the early 80s to Toronto, you know, was an engineer, didn't land a job, felt racism. He's a turbaned man. He started selling cars and he worked hard. I think he set the record, like 140 cars sold in like 3 months or so. He ended up owning that dealership and now he owns two. And now he's a season ticket holder courtside for the Toronto Raptors since, I think, 1998 or 99. He has become the face of ethnic diversity for the Raptors. He is an access point that allows more South Asians to get into the game of basketball. I feel that hockey has not created those access points yet. With Damps winning the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award, we finally got an access point now, right? The NHL basically bestowed us an access point for our community to come into hockey now. Well, now it's basically the NHL, that's what they want, right? The hard work still needs to happen. We have the access point with the NHL. Now it's to create it with the 32 teams, right? Obviously, I'm from Edmonton. I'm an Edmonton Oilers fan. The first organization we wanted to go talk to were the Edmonton Oilers. Let's create an access point. Just like how Nav Bhatia is basically empowered by the Raptors and the NBA, we need that empowerment. The NHL gave us that empowerment with the award. But the Edmonton Oilers also have to empower us so we can create these access points with our community, create different programming for South Asian youth, for immigrant youth that connect immigrants and minorities to the local hockey team. There's a lot of barriers. The hardest one I think we've overcome is by establishing what Upno Hockey is now, right? We're here. But the hard work is now with the 32 teams and getting them on board, because the 32 teams are not, they don't care about growing the game of hockey. Their one focus is to win a Stanley Cup. And I asked, when I had a meeting with Bob Nicholson of the Edmonton Oilers, I asked Bob this, and I was like, Bob, what's the difference between winning a Stanley Cup and growing the game of hockey? Which one is more important? Because growing the game of hockey means more revenue. Growing the game of hockey means more eyes on the product. Growing the game of hockey for us, for Upno Hockey, is we have a roster of male hockey players that could represent India at the Olympic level. Imagine an ice hockey men's team that represents India at the next Olympics, a country of 1.3 billion people. Wouldn't that grow the game of hockey?
It would.
So with all the stuff that's happening in the hockey world, with COVID, the pandemic, out of the four major sports, hockey was probably one of the most heavily impacted, because hockey relies on a lot of fans to come and pack into, you know, Madison Square Garden, the ticket sales, jersey sales, not so much as much as the TV contracts. So when you add in factors of revenue, add in factors of, look at like the player salary too, right? I was talking, we had a Bauer commercial with a Bauer athlete. And he's like, yeah, it's tough right now because, you know, escrow takes a bit. There's COVID payment deferrals. Tax is obviously taking a big cut. He's like, I'm not really left with a whole lot of my salary. And I told the NHL player, what if we could get more people watching hockey so players would be making more money too, just like the NBA players? And he's like, that's a great idea. And I was like, that's what I do, right? From a South Asian perspective, that's what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to grow the game of hockey internationally. So back to the question. What's more important, winning a Stanley Cup or growing the game of hockey? If you're asking for the longevity of the game of hockey, grow the game. Because I find there's a fine balance. I think everything in life needs balance. If we're too focused on winning a Stanley Cup, we neglect a lot of other things. And maybe if we're neglecting growing the game of hockey, it might bite hockey later down the road, maybe 100 years from now. Hockey's not, it's a tough sport to get into, right? And with MLS being the way it is, MLS is very accessible. It's growing, right? It's probably the fifth biggest sport now in North America. How are we going to be able to make these access points for minorities to the game of hockey so we ensure that the longevity of the game is still there? I don't want to see hockey leave. I want this sport to grow. And whether that be ice, ball hockey, street hockey, field hockey, it's all hockey. We got to be able to grow the game in natural, meaningful ways overseas internationally, right? And we're working on, Damps just got, he was just appointed VP of a ball hockey, I think inline ball hockey program out in Punjab, our home state, in India. We want to bring ball hockey out there, grow the game at a grassroots level, establish these programs with local NHL teams and minority communities in the respective regions.
Winning the Stanley Cup is great. Well, one out of the 32 teams will win a Stanley Cup. And obviously there's four or five teams that are close to it. You can still do both. Right. And that's where the NHL has to realize that you can do both. You can grow the game and still go for the Stanley Cup. You just need to know how to get in with people like myself and Lally that know the communities and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Right. Reach out. And like a lot of the faces that we see are white in the NHL. But if somebody goes, yeah, you know what, we want to give equal opportunity to the other communities, but we should do this. When the NHL speaks, everybody listens. When I was younger, a lot of my friends heard, oh, you know what, hockey's not your sport. You can stick to basketball, soccer, or something else. It's better for you guys. What does you guys mean in that context? Means like, you know, and I was lucky enough that that's when my dad pushed me so hard in hockey is like, he's like, I want you to be good so they can't kick you off the team. That was my way of staying in the game was I had to be good. And I remember my brother's team played hockey. I was playing men's league and my brother goes, and you know, they play lower level. I played pro and I came home from the gym. He's like, Damps, you got to play. And I'm like, why? He's like, well, these guys that were going to play tonight, they're very racist. And I'm like, how so? What? And, you know, I was playing the devil's advocate. I'm like, oh, what did they say? Did they call you brown? And back then, like, yeah, so what? They called you that. And he's like, no, they were telling us go back to Surrey, go play basketball, go become a doctor and all that. And I started laughing. I'm like, so we're not moving to Surrey and you're not going to be a doctor. I know that. So I go, none of you guys are. And he's like, no. And they're saying a lot of stupid stuff and a lot of arrogant stuff. And he goes to me, honestly, it sucks because when we play against them, they say all this kind of stuff and we can't do anything back. And he goes, you know how it felt when they told you, you know how it felt when you grow. And my head turned and he goes, I know. And then my eyes just turned a different, like my brother said, like a different color. He's like, he goes, you know how much racism that you faced? He goes, dad doesn't even tell you. And you know, you kept it in a lot too. So we are facing now, we feel like we know now how it feels to be in your shoes, how these guys are. And he goes, the whole team is being racist and they said stuff in the parking lot and all that. We can't do anything because we have jobs and all that. And that's when I was like, I'm going to pack my bag. Let me know when we're leaving and let's do this, right? And I remember playing that game and to be straight up honest, I heard it. And I remember in warm-up, the guy goes, oh, who's this guy? They're like, oh, don't worry. He's tall. He's probably another basketball player. And that's when my wheels turned in. And we ended up beating that team like 13-2 or something. And I ended up scoring majority of the goals. And then I walked by the bench because I obviously I'm a big guy and I go, I'm now going to go to Surrey to play basketball. And like, you know, it became more an emotional game and that should never happen. What's one place that we haven't made a mark yet? Sports, because the upper management doesn't allow it.
Yeah.
Now they're kind of forced to with Black Lives Movement, Asian hate, what's happened in India, all that kind of stuff with the farmers protest. Now people are like, oh, we need to now be diverse. But are they being diverse for the right reason or for the reasons of what's happening, right? You got to open the doors, right? Yeah. And it all happens with the NHL. And then all the other teams will be like, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
I have to disagree with two things. One is the premise that the 32 teams don't care. I mean, I think that's something that I want to clarify. I mean, as you guys know, as someone who's been at the GTHL conferences and met with Kim Davis, met with Robka Nezrig, there is a change in focus that comes with, and this is the way I think about it, right? Like there is a lot of stuff that we see in sports is more emblematic of what's happening in our society, right? Like you don't become racist the minute you walk into a hockey rink, right? I mean, those are the people that unfortunately we have to deal with everywhere. I think it becomes a problem when, as you said earlier, that it's systematic, right? When you kind of feel it happening and you don't have anywhere to turn. And I think that has become a bigger focus over the last few years. And I think part of it is that, and I say this for myself too, like for people like us, like we didn't know where to turn, right? Like you guys have a platform. There is a bigger focus. There's other groups that have come out and sort of made it known and kind of said that, hey, this is an issue that people need to discuss and to address. Because I think for the longest time, a lot of us just basically, and now when I say us, like people of color would just kind of go about, keep our heads down, you know, think that this is the way things are done. And you think that your only options are to either be quiet and suck it up or try to like overachieve and, you know, try to show that you belong. And there hasn't been a conscious effort to just from a society perspective, from sports in general, and certainly I would put hockey in that category, that there hasn't been a concerted effort to say that, holy crap, we didn't realize all this shit. I mean, even now, I mean, you're seeing this with Black Lives Matter since the George Floyd tragedy. The conversations that are happening, the books that are out there, you know, the people are now reading and kind of realizing, like, a lot of white people are sort of waking up and saying that I didn't even realize that this was such a big issue. And I think this is something that's happening across the world, across North America, certainly in both of our countries. So there is a focus now to listen to people who do have platforms, to have a way to put forward a position that says these are the issues that need to be addressed. So I think that is, it's going to be a slow process, but I think it's happening. And I know as someone who's part of this, like, I know that it would be incorrect to say that, you know, the 32 teams don't care or that the league is not making an effort to actually have these conversations with the clubs and with the communities to say how we change it. And I also think that the choices aren't win a Stanley Cup or grow the game, right? Like, the choices are hockey teams don't operate. It's not the, you know, the like any business, right? Like, you can walk and chew gum. And I think that's what we're sort of encouraging across the sport. And it's not just about the NHL and the 32 clubs. We're having conversations with USA Hockey and Hockey Canada and the AHL and the GTHL. And I think this is a concerted effort at the league level. You know, we have several committees that are being headed by very senior level people with current and former players, from broadcasters, minority multicultural broadcasters, youth hockey. You know, how do we make youth hockey more diverse? All these things are in place that we are kind of moving forward, and these are being communicated to the clubs, to all our partners. And I think that'll continue to build that out. It's important to know that, just to know that this is stuff is happening. And I know it's not happening as fast as any of us would like, but I think it's primarily there, mainly because just culturally from a society perspective, there hasn't been that focus, that conscious effort to kind of change things, you know, change the way that things are being done right now.
And adding to Danny's point, I think what we miss is accountability, right? It's important to hold people accountable. Now, we can have a march or we can read books, but it doesn't help unless people who are part of the system, who are abusing it and who have this racial hierarchy, are being held accountable. So we have to put systems on trial. And I think that's something that Lali, you and Dampy were trying to say. It's putting those systems on trial, not even individuals, right?
It's about accountability, right? I mean, we've seen it with the NFL now. Colin Kaepernick was the first to take a knee. The NFL was not with them. Roger Goodell came publicly and apologized that, I think, what, not even like 6-7 months ago? It took them 4 or 5 years. So to say that organizations like the NFL, like the NHL, like these larger sports, we make mistakes. We don't make the right decisions all the time. I understand there are community-based initiatives. I think San Jose Sharks do one. It's a turban tying event. Wonderful work, you know, by the San Jose Sharks on growing the game of hockey, you know, within the South Asian community out there. But the biggest thing I find is there's a lack of ethnic marketing in the NHL, because the NHL is so predominantly white. All the best players are white. I think the minorities that play hockey just go under the table. 96% of the NHL is white. 4% are minorities. Are we using the 4% to grow the game? Yes or no? When we look at different players, you know, across the league, now we got obviously the HDA, right? They have their own agenda on how to grow the game respectfully in their minority communities. It's up to these organizations about collaboration between all these different organizations to ensure that the perception of hockey is not white,
yeah,
right? It's the perception of hockey, when anybody asks, it's pretty much, oh yeah, it's a Caucasian-dominated sport, right? But are we allowing the 4% of the minorities that play in the game of hockey to actually have a voice?
So I want to pivot a little and talk about Apna, because Apna has received a lot of praise in the general media for what the organization is doing. I was curious what the reception was like within the South Asian community. Was there a particular instance where you thought, you know what, this is why I am doing what I'm doing? And is there like something that a parent or a kid said to you that sticks in your mind?
I'm with kids. I'm doing a session today after 3 o'clock today. And that will be the last one because we have the restrictions starting Saturday. I get a lot of positive feedback of working with our South Asian, not even our South Asian, just any kids that I work with. But a lot of the, I've been training some kids that are kind of new to elite level of hockey. And the son makes sketches of me. He watches my YouTube videos. He watches all the clips. He has them all saved, talks highly about me to his dad, and you know, his mom is the one that brings him. So And I did a session with him yesterday, and my mom was telling my wife that. So the kid, Nishan, his mom was talking to my mom about how much of an impact I've made with him, kind of on and off the ice, right? And she told my mom, she's like, we love him. He's awesome. He's our favorite. And my mom made sure she called my wife to tell him that, to tell her that too. So just stuff like that. I coached a kid and the season ends because of COVID and all that. And the great messages that you get over text or winning the award, you get a lot of positive feedback, but I've gotten a lot of families talking to me, calling me and so forth. So they like what we do in regards to being a voice for Upna Hockey. They like the fact that we are very open with other communities as well. And just our personalities, like for me, it's, you can probably guess that I like to joke around, and that's something that I've always done with kids, and joke around and make it light and make it humorous and then get to the points that we get to points. So, and I think those personalities are all built up from the age that me and Lali started playing hockey, learning it in the dress room, having fun with the boys and all that. And I think the reception that we're getting, I remember, obviously when it comes to reception, like we were invited to a lot of weddings during the summer. And if we would have got invited to a lot of weddings this year, a lot of conversation would be around Upna Hockey, like at parties and all that kind of stuff, if I was there. And so there's been, knock on wood, a lot of positive feedback from parents, for me in general, because I'm in front of kids all the time. But even in the community, I got a lot, in our Instagrams, a lot of people are following us and just making general nice, appreciative comments. So, so far, so good.
The biggest impact that I've seen, that Upna Hockey after the award, I think it's it's the credibility. Like I have had a lot of feedback from a lot of people. They're like, now it's credible. You've achieved credibility. Right. Now you've earned it. And now the real work starts.
For people listening to the Immigrantly podcast, they're not used to listening to sports topics, right? Why should they give hockey a try?
I think they should, if they're from different minorities, I don't know which backgrounds they're from, but search up whatever their ethnicity is and search up hockey player. And whatever Google shows up, you'll find the best hockey player from your community. And that's how you're going to get interested in hockey. That means your community is in hockey. It plays at different levels. I think that's the best way to get into hockey.
So in the end, I normally ask my guests this question, but I'm going to tweak it a little. So I ask them to define America in a word or a sentence. I'm going to ask both of you to define Canada in a word or a sentence. What does it mean to you?
I'm glad you said we don't have to answer the America because I live there. No comment. No, it's been, obviously I played hockey in America and I have a lot of good things and traveled a lot of places, but I was like, Trump, right? So go ahead, Lali, you can hit this one.
Opportunity is the best way I can describe Canada. At the end of the day, it accepted Damsa's parents, my parents. It gives an opportunity to a new life, a new way of life. Now, the way that I was went through hockey, it gave me an opportunity to play hockey, fall in love with the game. Did I get hurt? Yes, I did. But we're making it a positive, right? I think the best way to describe Canada is opportunity, especially for immigrants that come to this country. It's opportunity. You can work hard. And I was just talking to my mom before the podcast. She's like, Lali, make sure you talk about how hard immigrant parents have to work, right? Like it wasn't easy, right? My mom worked a job. My dad worked two jobs just to put me through hockey and, get, my siblings through school, university. It's opportunity, but you have an opportunity to work hard here. And that's the best part.
Lali took my answer. So no, opportunity, 100%. I think me and Lali talk about it all the time. I talk with my other friends too, like being Canada. So my alarm is set. So in the morning, I have kids and whatever, and one of my alarms is make it happen and hashtag. I always put that down if I'm writing something positive about some athlete or a kid or somebody. I'll be like, make it happen. You know what, you can come to Canada and you can make it happen for yourself. Like it's basically opportunity again, but I like using terms. And as soon as when you ask me that, what does Canada mean, is like, it gives us a chance, so opportunity, and allowed us to play hockey and me to get fake teeth and a couple of broken noses. But yeah, you can make it happen here.
Before we wrap up, can you share your information, your website, your IG, Twitter handle, if you have one?
So we're actually revamping our website. It will be called apnasportsfoundation.com. Probably be up and running in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But most of our work is on Instagram. So you can follow us at Apna, APNA Hockey. We're very active on our Instagram platform. We also have Twitter under the same handle. And on Facebook, we're called Apna Hockey School.
Thank you so much, guys. This was so good. And yeah, thank you for doing this.